On the night of March 13, 1997, Phoenix, the Valley of the Sun, was the Valley of the Strange.
I'm learning that this is happening worldwide. What's going on?
A huge craft. Many say a mile long or a mile wide was low in the sky and traveled over Phoenix. In fact, most of Arizona. We have Mike Fortson with us. Hi, I'm Jerry Pippin. Mike was a witness that night and has been an outspoken person about what the Phoenix Lights is or were. Mike's on the phone from Prescott Valley. Welcome to the show, Mike. Where is Prescott Valley? Is that close to Prescott?
About 10 miles.
And basically, you've lived there for a while, but you didn't live there in 1997.
No, sir. 1997, we lived in Chandler, Arizona, which is about 23 miles southeast of Phoenix.
Yeah, I've been to both places. And, in fact, that whole area is one of my favorite places in the whole world, even though I blew an engine once there in the mountains. But that's another story.
It can get you in a lot of trouble.
There was like 40 miles from anybody. And it was winter, and so what else is new? But let's talk about this thing that happened on March 13th. Did you see it?
Yes, sir.
Tell me from a personal experience what happened here. From your personal experience. Let's before we even go any further, let's set this up right with the audience. Most of the people, when we talk about the Phoenix Lights, they're thinking about these flare-type things at 10 o'clock. Whether there were or not, that's another story. This thing you saw definitely was not a flare. It was gigantic, right?
Yes, sir. Well, the five videos, there's five known videos. They were all shot right around 10 o'clock at night. They were all southwest of Phoenix. They weren't even over the city or even in the county. They were looking to the southwest towards Barry Goldwater. Those are the only known five videos that's out there. Those are around 10 o'clock at night. What my wife and I saw happened at 8:30 that night, and we got to see the large craft. Now, as I said, I was in Chandler, Arizona, which is about 23 miles east-southeast of Phoenix. When we got out to the edge of the patio and we were looking to the north, is this large boomerang-shaped craft that was very, very low to the ground came through the city lights, and the city lights of Phoenix and Tempe gave us a gray background in which this black object came right through. We had no problem whatsoever saying that it was a single object, but it was the size that got us, and it was so low to the ground.
And Bill Hamilton looked at me straight in the eyes and said it was a mile across. Was he right?
I said, as it passed in front of me, Jerry, from my Chandler home, I looked out to the south wing, because all we could see was the left wing of the craft as it passed in front of us. That's how low it was. From the nose of the craft to the end of the left wing was over 30 inches at arm's length. And I sit there and I told my wife as it was happening that that son of a gun was over a mile long. And it was. I mean, it was something. When people describe what they saw in the 8 o'clock hour, they use baseball fields and soccer fields and aircraft carriers and things like this because it's the largest thing that they know of. We don't have words that really describe the length of this craft or the size of this craft, and what I wrote was profoundly massive, and that was the best description I could come up with. But yes, sir, it was big.
Now, describe to me what you saw. Was it, I mean, could you hear anything?
Nothing. There was no visible signs of propulsion. There was no noise whatsoever. I said in my original report you could chase it in your car and not get a speeding ticket. 35, 40, 45 miles an hour, that was it. It just floated. I mean, I used that word, floated. But it was too big. It was just the size. I mean, our feet, we did not move our feet. Our jaw was on the ground. I was actually telling myself not to blink. I mean, because you're going to lose observation time, and it was just something that it's not supposed to exist, and it passed right in front of us. I mean, we were in total amazement.
Now, where were you when you saw this in Chandler? Home or where?
We were at our home. We were a half mile south of Chandler Boulevard and right at McQueen Road in Chandler.
This thing was headed which way at that time?
It was coming from the north, heading south, right down Alma School Road.
So it was headed on into Phoenix.
It was already past Phoenix. By the time we got outside and seen it. It was already past Harbor Airport and heading south, because I'm about 23 miles south, east-southeast.
Reason I ask you what this thing looked like, and I was hoping to get a good description, because there's just doesn't seem to be any photos.
There isn't. There's one 830 grainy video known. There is supposedly a old wives' tale, or if you want to call it that, of an 825 video up here in Prescott that was shot by an elderly couple. But no.
Now, they live in the same area you do, right? But you don't know them?
They're going to be within 20 miles of me, supposedly, if it's true. We don't know if the story's true.
You haven't been able to track that down yet.
Well, we tried, and that's, like I said, the newspaper article that came out in the Prescott Courier in March of this year tried to get him to come loose. I had my email address in it and everything else, and I did receive over 200 emails from people in the area, but it was not the one with the video. So most people will tell you, Jerry, and I even got a report today from a retired airline captain, Trick Johnson, who is a part of this, and we're going to post his report up too. But he just said, you know, I didn't want to lose the observation time. I didn't want to go. I didn't know where the camera was. If I knew where the batteries were charged, I didn't want to lose the observation time. And just like my wife and I, we stood there. I mean, we were cemented to the ground. There was no way I was budging.
How do you explain that all the media were able to grab pictures of this 10 o'clock thing when a mile-long or length craft, very low to the ground, not making any noise, nobody, not a TV camera, not a press camera?
Not a helicopter, no. Nope. Stopped a Little League game. All the parents at a Little League game in Ahwatukee, I mean, they're Little League games are run on time. There's no delays whatsoever. And at 8:30, when this went over the Little League game, it stopped. Everybody just stood there with their mouths open and watched this thing. Not one picture was taken. The Bradleys were coming up. Now, they're coming up from U of A on the interstate heading north. They had a carload of cameras. And their daughter was in a swim meet at ASU. And they saw the lights coming to them as they were heading north, and the lights were heading south. And they didn't take any pictures whatsoever. They just sit there and... actually, one of the wildest reports is theirs, because as they got to the object itself, it backtracked and reversed itself. While they were heading north, it actually stopped and went backwards north, staying with them. And they're both professors at the U of A, and she was told through telepathy of some sort, do not stop, this does not concern you, keep on driving. And that report never made it to the news. But there is a written report of it. I believe it's in Dr. Lynn's book.
You were in that DVD, her documentary.
I'm quite a few of them. I was in Peter Jennings' ABC, UFOs Seeing is Believing. Fuji, they came out here from Tokyo, Japan. They did a documentary on it. They actually did the right thing, Jerry. They actually waited at my house till 8:30, and they got the perspective of the light and everything else, the city lights, and they filmed from right there, and then they did their animation. They actually did it right. Most of them come out during the day and do their filming. So it's more authentic, I think.
And so your brushes with the media probably have left you conflicted about how well of a job they're doing.
It's kind of amusing in a way when you talk to producers and off the camera, mm-hmm. and because producers really don't respect the viewers. They think they just got to feed them video, and you can say whatever you want to say, that they're watching the video and not listening to the story itself. The story of March 13th and the massive UFO flyover that happened in the state has never been told properly. See, there just wasn't one V-shaped object. There was three that we know of. And usually people get told that there was just one that went right down the middle of the state towards Tucson, and that was it. Well, that's not true.
Well, tell me the true story.
Well, I think it started it started in the early hours when we had a Air Force spy satellite called the Misty 3, the MSTI. Dash 3, it's an Air Force spy satellite. Its batteries got disabled in the early hours of March 13th.
And you're talking about this flyover happened that night, and you're talking about maybe 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
I'm talking about something that probably happened really early that morning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's no proof to this.
Well, I have heard that even the president, Clinton at the time, was notified.
That's correct. Well, see, he was at... Greg Norman's house, and he got evacuated in the early hours of March 14th. Now, if you take Trick Johnson's sighting with the large craft at 10:20 on March 13th in Arizona, you know, it's what, 1:20 or 12:20
yes, uh-huh.
on the East Coast, and, you know, we went to DEFCON 3, and I've been told this by several people, And
you're an Air Force veteran, or you've been around the Air Force at least.
I'm a Navy veteran, and I was born in the Air Force.
Okay. Tell us what DEFCON 3 means.
Well, my understanding is in that I got out of the Navy in 75, and I'm not familiar with that term. That term was used several times. That's a high alert in peacetime, not in war, but in peace. That was just a high military alert. And there were military planes involved. There was three or four different occasions where Luke Air Force Base had fighter jets in the air. But if you take when President Clinton supposedly tripped and hurt his knee, I've always said this, and I wrote a couple articles on this, is you never saw a scar of his surgery, and he's a ham, and he loves press time. You never saw a scar on that knee. They rushed him out of Greg Norman's house, and they got him into the mountains of Virginia because they were unsure what was going on. These were very large craft. I call them visitation craft because it was totally friendly. All the witnesses that I've interviewed, Jerry, will tell you how friendly it was. It was peaceful.
It was just a feeling, an ambience?
It was just a feeling of peace. When you see something this size, you know, you think of you know, what is it, Independence Day with these great big ships and all the destruction and death and all this. Not at all. This is totally peaceful. You would think that something this big would create such a thrust to stay above the ground that it would destroy things and noise would be horrendous, you know, and people would be getting in their cars and running to the hills. None of this happened. It was peaceful. It was tranquil. It was a warm feeling.
When I came over you, did you get a warm feeling? And
no fear. We felt no fear whatsoever.
But no message, like...
No.
You just...
My report will tell you that I awoke from a nap, and it was 8:30, and I was going to bed, and I closed the bedroom window, and there it was, and we ran outside. For a couple of years, Jerry, I always thought that there was a reason why I woke up. You know, I could have slept through the whole thing. And I always thought that there was a reason. But really, the bottom line is it was just dumb luck, and I was at the right place at the right time. And there was no meaning that I had to see it or anything else, I don't think.
You hope, at least... that somebody, somewhere, has a video they've never told anybody about.
I hope the story is true. I've heard this story now for ever since the sighting occurred, that there was a couple in Prescott that did shoot it at 8:25.
Has anyone ever asked the TV stations how they could miss this story?
Most TV stations, I'll be honest with you, don't want this story. They don't want UFO stories.
UFO stories make Phoenix TV more than a lot of other places.
We're in a special area up here, Jerry. This is a special area. Sedona to Williams to Prescott and Phoenix. I mean, this is special areas out here. There's been sightings out here. I mean,
what makes it special, you think? Do you have a hunch?
Maybe the seclusion, the weather, the meaning of the Phoenix. I have no idea. A lot of people put the disappearance of the Anastasis 10,000 years ago. You know how Sedona is and the magnetics and the vortexes.
Yeah, I have many friends in Sedona, so I know what you're talking about.
Tom Dongo's got some great stuff. And,
yeah, I know him.
He's got some great stuff. And, you know, we just don't have the answers. You know, it's just a person like me who's a witness, who's very active. I'd love to talk to people.
I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want to let people know how to get a hold of you. They can always get in touch with you through us. But maybe you'll get a direct bite here. So don't go away. That'll give a chance for people to get a pencil.
I'll be here.
And paper. You're not a researcher, really. You're just an observer.
I'm a witness, and I'm a sky watcher, and... those are the only two self-given titles I really want to be. I mean, I'm just an active witness. That's basically it, and I love to talk to people. I won't come to people with a tape recorder and a notepad. I come to people with a handshake and a smile, and I just want to hear their story, and that's that. I won't write about them or anything else unless they want me to, and I'll share in their videos if they want to share them, and if not, if they just want to tell their story or call me and talk to me and tell me their story, I'll listen.
Okay, we'll let everybody know how they can get a hold of you when we come back. Marvelous Marv Grand Canyon Tours offers you a unique look at one of the great wonders of the world, the Grand Canyon.
Been at the Grand Canyon area most of my life, so pretty much grew up in the area and know quite a few things that the common tourist doesn't know. And I need to avoid all the people and stuff and try to take them to secluded areas.
A day excursion, personally, conducted by Marvelous Marv.
Yeah, we started about 8 o'clock in the morning. We're done about 4:30. Absolutely. And I have a little photo CD disc for him with 1,000 of my favorite pictures and some video. And
No other tour offers so much, and no other personalized tour offers a better price.
No, I'm still the same, and I'm the most reasonable price tour of the Grand Canyon. No, $85 a person. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Call 928-707-0291 or check him out at MarvelousMarv.com.
Everybody, keep your eyes open if you live in Arizona. Maybe it can come up with some new evidence or some new footage that can maybe shed some light on this. But I don't know if the Indians have been seeing it and everybody else, you know, see all those little writings in the rocks. So it's been going on for centuries, probably thousands of years.
That's maybe. Rich Giordano. He has a website called CNUFOs.com. He lives in Phoenix, and he's convinced a lot of this is spiritual or paranormal. However, our guest, Mike Fortson, saw something. It was real. It was big. And it is now, after well over a decade, Mike, I would say for you it's been all-consuming.
It's a passion. It really is. I mean, I see it in my mind. I'm a salesman, so I'm always out and about. I travel the state. I'm in real estate now, so I'm always meeting people and talking to people. And you never know when you come across people. I've come across instructors and trainers that were witnesses themselves. There's a lot of people that haven't told their story. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, yes, it's on my mind a lot.
Let's tell everyone how they can get a hold of me.
Well, you can, the best way is email. My email address is satmike, S-A-T-M-I-K-E, at cable1, that's O-N-E. .net.
Okay, and we have that also on the website, so they can click on that.
That's the easiest way and the best way. And I do. I get calls from all over the world. When Frank Warren had that on his blog site, I got emails from Israel, from France, from Canada, all over the United States, and it wasn't just about the large object. That's what I'm really trying to focus on, the large object. But I mean, you get these people who haven't told anybody about a sighting they had back in '53. And they open up. So it makes me feel good that they trust me enough, that I'm sincere enough that I'll listen to their
story. Talk about the press. You managed to get this story in the Prescott newspaper.
They're interested because, they knew basically about the story up here. The person that wrote it knew about me. I didn't approach her as a story about me and my story and about me at all. It was trying to find witnesses, and that impressed her and the editor enough to really give us a full-page story and several pictures and what we do. I mean,
so what kind of reaction did you get there in the community with that story?
I got over 200 emails.
Yeah,
and I thought that was very, I thought that was pretty good. I thought one article, 200 emails, that's really good. And I get stragglers all the time. Probably get 3 to 5 a month, maybe. After that story came out, but finally deciding to write, some people, Jerry, get embarrassed. You know, they maybe how they write or how they spell, or their story may sound too corny or too fishy, and they just soon keep it to themselves. And sometimes they just sit down and they say, "I'm going to do it," and they do
this
it.
This thing, let's go back to the original. You looked out your window and of your bedroom. You just woke up, right?
I woke up from a nap in a recliner.
Okay, and you yelled for your wife and said, "Come look at this." You guys went outside and you saw...
Outside right okay, now.
And you saw a massive V-shaped craft, for lack of a better term.
That's correct. Chevron, V-shaped.
Was it going with the point in front?
I couldn't really tell that there was a point until it got in front of us.
Okay.
Exactly in front of us. As it was coming from the north on, it almost looked like a straight line.
The reason I ask you that is we've been doing UFO shows for 4 decades, really. And the flying triangles have always puzzled me because many, if not all, the reports, they're going the opposite direction of aerodynamics.
This was open in the back, though. It wasn't a triangle.
Okay.
Once it passed...
It was kind of like a boomerang, only it's really a V.
It was a V, yes, sir, or a chevron. All three of those words.
Did it have lights or something on it?
There was large red lights along the side. And it could have been along the side or on the bottom. I couldn't really...
Something that large had to have room, you know, windows.
If we put it on our... Who knows? It could be a million years ahead of us. Who knows? I mean, none of it showed up on radar. It made no noise. It floated. It was massive. You know, I had somebody tell me, "Mike, what you saw was a B-2 bomber." And my remark was all 40 of our B-2 bombers can land on the left wing of this craft and still have room for the KC-135 refueling wing.
It was huge, huge, huge.
We don't have words for it. People use multiple baseball fields, multiple soccer fields, 8-9 aircraft carriers. I mean, there's just no words in our language that can really...
Wait, before the thing got to Arizona, where was it?
You have no idea.
It just kind of, in other words, as far as I know, I don't know any reports other than Arizona.
They said it came out of Kingman first, but there are no witnesses out of Kingman. The very first witness that I interviewed was, if you read the stories on March 13th, they'll tell you that at 8:16 in Paulden, Arizona, there was a retired police officer that called in. Well, it wasn't a police officer. He was a retired Army major, and his name's Lyle Vann. And I interviewed him, and he's a very good friend of mine. And he tried to get the story straight, and nobody had ever listened to him. But it started at 8:16 in Paulden, Arizona, which is probably around... I'm going to say maybe 8 or 9 miles north of Chino Valley, which is about 16 miles north of Prescott.
So it was below Flagstaff, even.
Yes, and west a little bit.
Uh-huh. So as far as you know, extreme northern Arizona never saw the thing.
Supposedly, and I haven't seen the reports on this, and so I'm not going to be a... Supposedly it came out of Kingman. And Henderson.
Yeah, but as you said, you just really haven't.
No written reports, nobody I've talked to, nobody's called me. I've talked to people in Paulden and Chino Valley and Prescott Valley, Dewey, all the way down to Phoenix and all the little cities around Phoenix, but nobody northwest of Paulden, no sir.
You
and I'm not the investigator or the researcher in this.
Yeah.
It sounds like I do, but I just try to meet the people. That's it.
Well,
it is what it is.
Yeah.
I'm very curious in the large object, and I think the more people you meet and you talk to, sooner or later you might get a snapshot, a 35 millimeter, maybe an high eight video or something. We're only hoping, and you never know. It might show up one day.
It just why do you think somebody didn't take a picture like that?
I think they were so mesmerized by the object itself that you didn't want to move. You did not want to waste any observation time whatsoever. When you see, let's put it this way, Jerry. If you're outside in a magnificent evening and all the stars in the heavens, and here comes the hand of God, and I'm saying, would you run and get a camera or would you stay there and watch? And I bet you, to something that profoundly wonderful, you're going to stay there and watch.
So in other words, this thing not only was spectacular seeing it, but it gave you some sort of euphoric feeling.
Yes.
Can you draw any conclusion from that? Do you have a hunch?
Except maybe they were just letting people know that it was friendly, and it was a visit. They weren't here to hurt anybody. They weren't here to cause any damage or destruction. I mean, there was no car wrecks. There wasn't anything going on. To my knowledge, nothing out of the ordinary. I think it was a total friendly event, and they maybe were letting us know that. There was no panic. See, that was the key. When you see something this big, it's not supposed to exist. You would think people would, you know, get the baby and throw it in the car and get the heck out of town, you know. And no, it's none of that. It was just a warm, peaceful feeling, and there was no destruction. There was no...
Tell me about Tom King. His name keeps coming up a lot.
He's a very good friend of mine. He's a young guy. He's very active. He's a witness as well. He and Bill Hamilton was with Mike Christen and Mike Christen's wife in Ahwatukee. They were part of the 10 o'clock video that night. Tom King's the one in the original. If you ever see any of the old original March 13th videos, Tom King's the one that says major sighting here. He's also very analytical. He's very proficient in computers. He's very good in math.
You're friendly and also respect Dr. Bruce Maccabee, I take it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, didn't he say these 10 o'clock things were likely?
He and Tom King both agree on this. And, you know, if you think about it, you know, they did a triangulation. The problem with the 10 o'clock videos, Jerry, is nobody was close enough to the lights to really determine what they were, and the way they behaved and everything else, and the altitude they had to have been ignited at to be seen in Phoenix. And Dr. Maccabee came out, it was 16 or 17,000 foot was the ignition, and in order to be seen by all five videos looking to the southwest, and all five locations were elevated locations. That means they had mountainside homes.
Okay, now, you know, it seems to me, and, you know, I've been doing conspiracy shows all my life, so it's natural thinking in my part. I won't run it by you. It seems to me this big object came over at 8:30. The authorities decided they better do something to cover it up until they had a flare show at 10.
Well, sir, if you read my report, you just read it right there. It was called the intentional diversion, and it was a diversion, and it got all the attention. And that's every time anybody would interview an 8 o'clock witness like myself or anybody else from 8:16 to 8:45 that saw the large object, in the background on the screen, they would play the 10 o'clock video, thus confusing everyone and not telling the truth intentionally, because there was no 8:30 video to show, and we just can't have words out there. We got to have video. So it was an intentional diversion, yes, sir.
Now, when you, and you talked to many producers, because you've done a lot of TV, and I've been in this business, as I said, for a long time. My personal experience is I've never had anybody from the government come to me and say, don't report that. They're always much more clever than that. They do something like you're talking about, a diversion or something to get you off the subject.
I've also learned that they have FCC licenses and advertisers. And it really depends on how that advertiser feels about the story. Sometimes they have to debunk the story after they tell the story to please the advertiser.
Well, that's definitely true. I mean, that's exactly what... if I have one conversation, I've had 500 conversations about... You don't want to offend our account here.
Well, and you also got an FCC license. You don't want to lose your license.
Well, but they're going to lose the FCC license. That's a paper tiger. That's not going to happen. FCC can't jerk anybody's license. Have you ever seen the FCC jerk anybody's license?
No, sir. I never.
No, they don't do it. In fact, they are so lackadaisical, the FCC is, that nobody in broadcasting fears the FCC at all, because they don't do anything.
Unless you have an equipment malfunction.
They don't even do it then.
No, I was talking about the Super Bowl.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's just for show.
You know, once this...
The FCC is like the... and I don't want to get into politics here, but they're just like the FDA. They're owned and operated by people who are friendly to the industry. Well, I must tell you that a huge amount of our audience is in Virginia, and many of the ISPs are government ISPs.
And I got into those two news groups to explain what I saw, because everybody was talking about the 10 o'clock flares. Once I started posting in there, I started getting .jpl, .nasa, .gov emails asking about this.
Hey.
I told them what I saw.
They could be fans.
Oh, I'm sure they are. How would you like to be the commanding officer at NORAD, U.S. Space Command, for one day and find out the truth about all this?
You think they know, huh?
Yes, sir. The Misty 3 sent photos. Misty 3, the satellite I was telling you about earlier...
Yeah, I want to get back to that.
...was made by Spectrum Astro in Gilbert, Arizona, right where I lived before I moved up here. Gilbert's right next to Chandler. All these cities are...
Yeah, yeah.
Spectrum Astro built that. It's the third in a series of spy satellites that its mission was to take pictures of hot objects coming in and going out. And they even call it hot rockets from space in their description. It's the size of a refrigerator. Well, this thing was, its batteries were disabled. And one of the engineers that I contacted and I got to know and everything, his wife is a witness in the 8 o'clock hour to the sighting scene. So he and I hit it off right away. And there were certain things about the Misty 3 he could not tell me, except it went into elliptical orbit, and its batteries did regenerate and recharge because they're through solar, and it did come back to life, and then the Air Force ordered it to be shot by the Miracle laser, the MIRCL laser in White Sands, New Mexico, in August of 97. It was shot, and in December it was ordered to deorbit, and it crashed into the Pacific just east of Hawaii right before Christmas.
Why'd they do that?
Because it was touched. It was touched by an incoming object. It was disabled by an incoming object, and nobody knew what damage was done or what they had done to it, so they ordered it destroyed. That satellite still had 3 years good life left. That's per the engineer that I talked to. And I'm not going to mention his name, of course, but yes, that was...
Well, then, since you think some people in the government know... Who do they know?
Who?
Yeah, who is this?
People that warned the president, I'm quite sure at that time, Bill Clinton, I'm quite sure that that those people had a pretty good idea. And they
who are these people in the craft or whatever? We don't have a clue, do we?
They could be us. I mean, they could be from our future. They could be angels. I mean, who knows? They could be anything. I have no idea.
So you don't really have a pet theory about that part. Right now, your main objective here is to find a photograph.
Or get it on video if it returns myself.
Mm-hmm. And you'd like to do this right away.
It would be nice.
Yeah. Well, we'd like for you to.
Yeah, when I'm outside sky watching, which is up here in Prescott Valley, Arizona, I mean, my goodness, the sky watching is just phenomenal. The stars are just fantastic. And if I ever had a chance, I mean, I've already made my pact with my wife and everything. We've been married 34 years. But anyway, I mean, I want to be lifted. I want to know. I mean, I really do. That's how intense it is with me. I just want to know the truth. I'd like to communicate. I really would. I'd like to know about their creator.
You think they've ever come back?
I don't know. That might be a once-in-a-lifetime deal. I'm hoping.
I mean, you know, something that large, you would think it would be a cruise ship or something.
Called it a visitation craft.
Or a battle cruiser or whatever. That's what I mean. You know.
But, you know, you can go to the National UFO Reporting Center and you can see the V and the chevron and the large objects, and you can every once in a while you come across a report where they use the distance and the size, and you know it's still there. It's somewhere in the world, you know, every once in a while. We just don't know when, where, and how, and why, you know.
Yeah, it's either that craft or similar ones.
Yes, sir.
We have flying boomerangs, huge ones, reported every once in a while.
It's not just saucers. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. You know, I haven't seen a saucer. I've never seen that, but I got a daytime video that I shot in December of 2000 of a boomerang, and it was very high. And I did have that sent to Dr. Maccabee and to look at it.
Well, yeah, let's get back to Maccabee. He thinks he's willing to admit the 8:30 thing, the 8:16, whatever time we want to use here. It was probably out of this world.
That was the real deal.
Real deal. Mike Fortson, he saw it. The huge craft that was involved in the Phoenix Lights. We'll be back in a moment.
Hello, I'm Anthony Miles, director of the award-winning motion picture Fast Walkers, They Are Here. Our first volume, Fast Walkers Open Files Volume 1, features well-known and respected Texas journalist and best-selling author Investigator Jim Mars. Also featured in Volume 1 is internationally respected talk show host Jerry Pippin, whose internet-based radio network and UFO Files show reaches millions of listeners and interactors throughout the world. Jerry's insightful commentary will give Volume 1 viewers an inside look at how even mainstream broadcasters and interviewers are now being forced to embrace and accept the UFO disclosure phenomenon worldwide. Also presented in Volume 1 is the respected world-class futurist Alfred Lambremont Weber, the founding father of exopolitics. And be sure to check the fastwalkers.com website on a regular basis for the upcoming release of additional Fast Walkers Open Files volumes.
At the Phoenix Lights with Mike Fortson, and he's on the line from Prescott Valley in Arizona, and he saw the real thing, the mile-wide craft. Mike, have you ever thought about writing a book? Have you written a book?
No, sir. No, sir.
Yeah, but you've appeared in these documentaries. Have you ever made one?
No. No, I've always just been a part of them. I'm picky about the ones I'm in now, but... Yeah, I'll do the interviews. As far as writing a book,
the reason I'm getting to this is, and we're not going to get into it. Yeah, we're not getting on the going to do it on the air here. I don't want to knock anybody, but you and I have talked about people that we think are fraudulent off the air.
Yes, sir.
That seems to be one of the main problems that we have in the UFO business.
No question. No question. There's people that are just trying way too hard to get attention. And I'm one of these people that I just believe that if you're at the right place at the right time, you know, just hope you have a camera with you. You know, Eve, I carry a disposable camera in my glove box, in my car. I mean, It's don't make it happen. Don't create it. Don't ruin your name or anything else by trying to create something. Just let it happen and hope you're at the right place at the right time. And you have a camera with film and fresh batteries and ready to roll. And just hold it still. Don't zoom in, zoom out. Just do it in wide angle and let it fly. There's software that we can analyze, you know, the video with.
Anything of interest to our audience, sightings-wise, occurred more recently than 97?
The red lights, single red lights. It's almost like a starboard light, several of them independently flying around. Nobody knows what they are. Got some of them on video. I think I got 12 or 13 videos of that stuff, but nobody really knows what they are. They're probably somewhere between 4 and 8 feet maybe in diameter. It's really hard to say if it's a hoax or what. Nothing's really been done with it. It's been talked about and written about a little bit, but it kind of just went away. It was big in 99, 2000, 2001 down in the valley. That was about it. I mean, it's been pretty quiet the last couple of years. It really has.
And do you have, you almost consumed with this by your own words. Do you have any hunch or gut feeling about why that year and no more?
Hillbop. That was the reason a lot of people were outside.
Mm-hmm.
If I recall back in 97, I could see Hillbop in daytime and nighttime. It seems like I could see it early in the morning and late at night. I'm believing that I saw it twice. So we were really fascinated by seeing a comet. I got some video of it. I can't really answer that.
Do you think there's any connection there? Probably not. Or just that there are people out looking around. That seems to be, the reason there's not more sightings, in my opinion, that people aren't looking up. They're watching where they're going.
Don't skywatch driving a car.
But you're an old skywatcher. You said that.
I enjoy it. I find great peace in just shutting the TV off. Like I said, my wife and I have been married 34 years. A lot of times after dinner, you sit in front of the TV and you let the TV do the talking. And, you know, sometimes, you know, what we've learned since 97, and there's a couple stories written about this. If you search like Mike Fortson, Phoenix Lights, you'll see the stories that's been written about my wife and I that, you know, we shut the TV off, we go outside and we skywatch for an hour and a half, and we talk to each other, you know, and it really did. And in 34 years of marriage, it's a test, and within itself.
And your wife is as supportive as any wife could be for this. In fact, she enjoys it,
well,
too.
She saw that big object pass front of her. She has no need to be there. Mm-hmm. We all want to see it again. There's no question. If any of the witnesses or anybody that listens to this show, if they saw the object that we're talking about in 97 in Arizona, then they know what we're saying. You know, you want to see it again. You really do. You want a second chance.
Any of these documentaries capture that feeling? I don't guess they can, really.
Out of the Blue.
Okay.
James Fox did a job in Out of the Blue. That's the best one.
And then, of course, you like the Japanese version, you said, too.
They dubbed me in Japanese. I couldn't understand what they were saying. We got a kick out of it and everything. But the problem was, I mean, we didn't know how they were explaining the story or anything.
Sure.
But the video, they're very good in animation. And the video, they did a very good job in the animation of the craft.
It looked similar.
Yes. Yes, he had me draw pictures and everything, and they did a really good job. I interviewed a work crew at 10:30 that night, and the guy was on top of the Bank One Tower, and he said when he saw this coming at him, he felt he had to duck, and that's how low this thing was, and that's where Frank put that craft really low over the buildings.
We're talking about Frank Warren, who is quite a guy, and we do...
Well, I'm glad I met him. I mean, he's really been open, and he's helped a lot on this story, and... Yet people don't really understand the 8 o'clock events. And you can search this all the way back into the old writings that I've done and so forth. I mean,
I don't know how much luck we're going to have digging up somebody, but you never know. That's one reason you're doing the interview, I know.
Yes, sir. I'll talk to you again.
Oh, we will. We'll do a lot of things, and maybe a video will suddenly appear.
You'll be the second to know.
Run it to Frank.
I'll tell my wife first.
Oh, okay. Well, I've enjoyed it, Mike. Anything else you want to add here?
You let me talk. I appreciate that, Jerry. I think I covered everything, and I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show. And, you know, if you need to talk to me again or if there's interest, I'm here.
I hope you don't think I was disagreeing with you about the media being manipulated. I'm not at all. I'm just disagreeing on how they do it.
You develop a thicker skin. And you just got to learn that, you know, I mean, there's there's a lot of different, everybody sees things differently sometimes. And the way I see the media and everything else is a lot of these people just want to do a quick show. And they're not interested in the case whatsoever.
Well, that's true.
Oh, absolutely.
No doubt about it.
Them, down the valley, there's one especially on Channel 3, and he's just fascinated by this, and we talk a lot, and I send him stuff, and, you know, I mean, there is one, and I'll do their show for him, because the others really have been negligent, really, in telling the story.
I have the feeling that a lot of these UFO-related stories do hit the air in Phoenix, now that maybe they're not played as positively as you'd like.
Quick fillers.
Yes, true. But there's some negativity, but not all of those reports have a guy smirking and laughing and banging on the table.
I know.
And that was the way it was for a long time.
Yes, sir. I was there. I was there. But you know what? You learn, and you know, you just move on. You just go to the next show if they'll have you, and just try to get your story out. I mean, that's it. I mean, if that's the way they feel, then God bless them, you know? I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Mike, thanks very much for a great interview, and we wish you success on getting more pictures. People, if you're listening, you got something for Mike, get in contact with him. I hope you get some information. Get some email action, Mike Fortson.
I got a lot of information on that. I mean, it's nonstop. It really is. And I guarantee you, I'll get witnesses. There will be somebody contact me, I'm quite sure.
You stay in touch with us, okay?
Yes, sir.
I've enjoyed it. 13 years since the Phoenix Lights back in 1997, but things like flying boomerangs are still being reported. Just recently, earlier this month in March, one was reported down in Lake Havasu City, which is on the California-Arizona border. Something definitely is happening in that part of the country. Then there's the Needles UFO crash last April. We'll be talking to Linda Moten Howe about that when we visit with her at the Ozark UFO Conference coming up in April. Once again, Mike, thanks for being on. This has been a Phoenix Light special. This program was edited by Jane Swartley. I'm Jerry Pippin. Thank you for listening. Until next time, cheers.